Let's go ahead and turn to Judges chapter 13 as we get back into the Word today. We had just starting to introduce our next judge of this time period, and that is going to be a man by the name of Samson. I believe that Samuel and Samson were born right around the same time. I think that we could put it right around 1096 BC, give or take a couple of years. And it was as the Philistines were oppressing the sinful people of Israel after the death of their last few judges. And so these two boys are going to grow up underneath the Philistine oppression, and they are going to begin the ending of that oppression and the introduction of the monarchical period, that is, the period of the kings. So far, we have an angel that appeared to the wife of Manoah down in the territory of Dan in a city by the name of Zorah. And when she goes back and tells her husband what the angel said, Manoah wants more. He wants more information. And so Judges 13:8 says, Manoah prayed to He Who Is and said, O Lord, please let the man of God whom You sent come again to us and teach us what we are to do with the child who will be born. And God listened to the voice of Manoah, and the angel of God came again to the woman as she sat in the field. But Manoah, her husband, was not with her. So this is the second time the angel appeared to her with no Manoah around. So the woman ran quickly and told her husband, Behold, the man who came to me the other day has appeared to me. So he's coming as a human being. He is different than the normal human being. The woman described him as having the appearance like the messenger of God, like the angel of God. So he probably has super white clothes and probably looks extra clean and vigorous. So she meets him again, runs off, grabs Manoah. Manoah arose and went after his wife and came to the man and said, Are you the man who spoke to this woman? He said, I am. And Manoah said, Now, when your words come true, what is to be the child's manner of life? What's his mission? So Dad wants to know what he's supposed to be preparing his son for. These guys, I think, understand that they are in a period where a new judge has to arise. And their son, they suspect, is going to be that judge. But they want to know what can they do in order to make him the best possible person for this job. So the angel of He Who Is said to Manoah, Of all that I said to the woman, let her be careful. She may not eat of anything that comes from the vine, neither let her drink wine or strong drink or eat any unclean thing. All that I commanded her, let her observe. So the child is going to be Nazirite. Remember, a Nazirite is a special category of Israeli who lives like a priest a priest who is going through their dedication service, meaning they don't go to funerals, they don't touch dead bodies, even of their close relatives. They don't cut their hair, they don't drink anything alcoholic, they don't even eat anything that comes from the wine vine. It's typical that a person would take that vow on themselves for a period of time. But every once in a while, someone will volunteer to do it for the rest of their life. Or someone will be asked by God to do it for their entire life. And so that is the case with both of these young men that are growing up at this time, that are conceived and born at this time, Samuel and Samson. And since it's from the womb, mom has to live by this Nazirite lifestyle the entire time she is pregnant and the entire time she is nursing the child. So for all practical purposes, Mrs. Manoah is going to be a Nazirite for at least the next 3 years. So Manoah said to the angel of He Who Is, "Please let us detain you and prepare a young goat for you." And the angel of He Who Is said to Manoah, "If you detain me, I will not eat of your food. But if you prepare a burnt offering, then we'll offer it to He Who Is." For Manoah did not know that he was the angel of He Who Is. So Manoah was thinking this is a human messenger of God. This is a prophet of God. So he was basically just wanting to say thank you for bringing this message. Let us pay you for your trouble by feeding you, and then you can take the leftovers. But this is a supernatural messenger of God who has no requirement for human food. And so his response is, fine, you want to make the meal, but if you make the meal, it's going to be devoted to God as a sacrifice. So Manoah said to the angel of He Who Is, "What is your name so that when your words come true, we may honor you?" Now, it seems to me that he likely intended to give the child a name that would be built on the name of this messenger. That's why he was asking. Now, verse 18, "The angel of He Who Is said to him, 'Why do you ask my name, seeing it is wonderful?'" Now, people have made an awful lot out of this by associating this passage with Isaiah chapter number 9, which talks about the name of the son that is born, the Messiah, is going to be Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. And because of that, they jump to the conclusion, this must be a Christophany. This must be a pre-incarnate appearance of Jesus. And I can appreciate why they go to that idea. The wording is very interesting, but I am not altogether certain that that can be sustained as an absolute reality. Because this is what we know. When angels come, they function as the tools of God, much as a phone does for us. And as such, they speak in the first person. They speak the words of God, not their own words. I use the illustration that if somebody came up to you with a phone and said, "Hey, here's your mom, talk to her," you wouldn't look at the phone and go, "Well, that's not my mom. Why should I talk to a phone?" You would pick it up and you'd start talking to your mom who was on the other line or the other end of the line, because you know that the phone is just a tool through which your mom is speaking to you. So that's the way angels, that's the way even human messengers were perceived in the ancient culture. So this could be Gabriel, could be Michael, could be some other unnamed in Scripture angel. And what I think might be coming out from his words here is, why do you want to know my name? Because it's not going to mean anything to you, because it's a name that's special for me. It's beyond your comprehension, I think, is what he's saying. So that's my alternate understanding of what's being said here. I'm not convinced this is Jesus. Okay? So verse number 2. "So Manoah took the young goat with the grain offering and offered it on the rock to He Who Is, to the one who works wonders, and Manoah and his wife were watching." So he would have normally grabbed a young kid, a young goat, that was reserved for special food, and very quickly butchered it and put it on a spit and roasted it over an open flame and cooked up some bread and added some of the broth that came off of the roasted goat. And this would have been lunch. It could have been prepared in an hour or so. and enjoyed by the messenger. But instead, because this messenger said, no, I'm not going to eat it, but you can bring the elements right here and lay it out here on this stone. And so that's what they do. And then verse 29, when the flame went up toward heaven from the altar, the angel of He Who Is went up in the flame of the altar. So we don't know all the fine details of this, but based on some other stories that are similar, it may be that the angel reached out toward the offering elements with his staff or maybe with his hand, and fire suddenly just comes out of nowhere and it burns up the sacrifice. So this would be divine fire. This would be God's fire, supernatural fire. But he goes one better than just simply bringing supernatural fire to eat up the sacrifice. He actually jumps up into the flame and ascends into the sky with the smoke. And that's how he disappears. And that's when Manoah and his wife suddenly realize they were dealing with a supernatural being, not with a human being. They were dealing with one of the Bene Elohim, one of the sons of the gods, or the son of God. And so Manoah and his wife were watching, and they fell on their faces to the ground, which is a most natural reaction to being into the presence of something divine and supernatural. So the angel of He Who Is appeared no more to Manoah and to his wife. That was it. They didn't see him anymore. Then Manoah knew that he was the angel of He Who Is, and Manoah said to his wife, we are surely going to die, for we've seen God, we've seen Elohim. We've seen a divine being, a supernatural being, which is, it's funny that he would say this, and his wife catches him out on it. Because why would God kill you after he's told you that you're going to raise this son of yours to serve God? It doesn't compute, does it? So his wife said back to him, if He Who Is had meant to kill us, he would not have accepted a burnt offering and a grain offering at our hands, or shown us all these things, or now announced to us such things as these. So she's sticking with the reality. She's sticking with the logic. Come on, Manoah, think about it. Why would he give us all this information and then kill us because we saw him? That doesn't compute at all. And so the woman bore a son, and she called his name Shimshon, or as we say, Samson. Shimshon is the Hebrew way of saying like the sun, as in the sun up in the sky. So they wanted to name this child Sunlight or Sunrise or something similar to that. The idea that he shines like the sun for us. And we might think that's a really cutesy sort of thing to name him. But it's also a regional name. There is a city near their town that is called Beth Shemesh, which means the house of the sun. Now, when it was a pagan city back in the Canaanite era, it was a place where the sun was kind of worshipped as a god. But according to what the Israelis should have done, that pagan element should have been ducked out of their lives. And they just certainly should have thought of it as kind of the sunshine city or sun city, as something pleasant within the creation of God. So they named their son like the sun. And so the young man grew, and He Who Is blessed him. All right, so now just kind of keep these things in our head. We've got Samson growing up down in Dan, and then about 30 or so miles away up at Shiloh, we've got Samuel growing up as a prophet of God. And if Manoah was the fully righteous man that I expect him to be, then he would have traveled to Shiloh about three times a year to go to Passover, Pentecost, and Tabernacles. And during some of those trips, he most certainly would have taken his family, possibly to Tabernacles. And it's very likely that Samson and Samuel would have been in close proximity to one another during these years of their youth, because I believe they are contemporaries growing up at the exact same time. All right, verse number 25. And the spirit of he who is began to stir him in Manahedan between Zorah and Eshtaol. So there's this valley or this traveling area where you go down from Beth Horon, which is not very far from Bethel, up in the central highlands of the Israeli-held territory. There's a valley and a travel corridor that heads down toward the Mediterranean coast. And it's in that area, near Zorah and Eshtaol, that Samson grows up, and he starts being used by God to break the power of the Philistines. Now, what did that power of the Philistines look like? Well, they control completely the flatland that was down along the coast of the Mediterranean. And they also probably controlled some of the access roads going up into Israel itself and across Israel to the King's Highway that went up to Damascus and up into Mesopotamia. So the Philistines they probably got little outposts here and there in Israeli territory. And they've probably controlled taxes and tribute money in certain places and usage fees. And we find out later that they are controlling access to high-tech information such as blacksmithing. So that's what Samuel and Samson are growing up under. And Samson is closer to it, because he's right in the border territory with the Philistines. And that's why he ends up being the one that fights against them first. And so here's the way that that began. Chapter 14. Samson went down to Timnah, which is only a few miles from his hometown. And at Timnah, he saw one of the daughters of the Philistines. So he's down closer to the Philistine coast. He sees a woman probably right around his same age and in their late teens. And he came up and told his father and mother, "I saw one of the daughters of the Philistines at Timnah. Now get her for me as my wife." So he talks to mom and dad, says, "I saw somebody I fell in love with. She's a Philistine woman. And I want you to start making the arrangements for us to get married." Now, what do those arrangements consist of? Mom and dad have to pay money have to pay money to the family of the woman. That's kind of like life insurance ahead of time and alimony ahead of time. It's a guaranteed deposit that even if this marriage doesn't work out, even if the young man dies, that there'll be money there to take care of the woman and any children that she has. So Samson is asking his mom and dad to put some money up to arrange for him to eventually marry this woman. And there will be promises made, an arrangement, an agreement entered into between the two families. Now, verse 3, his father and mother said to him, "Is there not a woman among the daughters of your relatives or among all our peoples that you must go take a wife from the uncircumcised Philistines?" So they're like, "Samson, don't you have any Jewish girls that you know? Don't you have any Israeli women or Danite women here in the community that you would want to get married to? Why do you have to get married to a foreigner?" Because remember, they have at least some very basic religious principles. That's why God picked them. And God had said that Israelis should not marry outside their faith. They should not be marrying other ethnic groups that worship other gods. And the Philistines worshiped different gods. So they object to it. But Samson shows his character at this particular time. Samson said to his father, "Get her for me, for she's right in my eyes." You remember the theme of the book of Judges? There was no king in Israel in those days. Everyone did as they saw fit in their own eyes. So Samson fell into that trap as well. As an older teen, he says, "I don't care, Mom and Dad. I like the way she looks. She's the one for me. Now please make the arrangements." All right, so verse number 4. His father and his mother did not know it was from He Who Is, for he was seeking an opportunity against the Philistines. At that time, the Philistines ruled over Israel. So just a note of the prophet who's writing the book of Judges, that Mom and Dad didn't realize God was going to use this to break the power of the Philistines. Verse number 5. Samson went down with his father and mother to Timnah. They came to the vineyards of Timnah. So they're on the path. Samson's on his own. He does like so many teenagers would do in an occasion like this. He leaves his mom and dad way behind and goes wandering off on the side and doing other things. He's up in the vineyards of Timnah, which has caused some commentators to suggest that he was already fiddling with the requirements of his Nazirite vow, that he's not supposed to have anything to do with things from the vine. It's common practice in the Middle East to even make food dishes using grape leaves. And so a Nazirite was not supposed to do anything related to the grapevine. So he may have been messing around in the grapevines, eating grapes or doing other things that he should not have done based on his Nazirite vow. We don't know that for sure, but I think it's not a bad suggestion given the attitude that we know he has. Now, while he's out there doing this on his own, behold, a young lion came toward him roaring. Now, back at this time, lions were, they were indigenous to Israel. And they kept to the hills and the wilder places, and apparently this is one of them. And it sees him as a food item and rushes at him. And then verse 6 happens. Then the spirit of He Who Is rushed upon him. Now, we've seen this phrase before in relation to Jephthah most recently. It indicates some sort of supernatural power, a physical, possible mental, sometimes spiritual power that comes upon him and does things bigger and better than normal. In this case, it gives him supernatural strength. His body is not super strong. I mean, he's just a normal teenager of this time period. But God gives it extra strength so that although he had nothing in his hand, he tore the lion to pieces as one tears a young goat. See, if you wanted, as a teenager, you could break the neck of a goat with your own hands. You could break its back. You could strangle it to death. Because a young goat is not that big of a deal as far as a teenage boy is concerned. That's how easy it was for him to kill this full-grown lion. It was no big deal. It was easy. It was shocking to him because this is the first time that this has happened. And so he did not tell his father, his mother, what he'd done. And that becomes important to later in the story, is that he did not share this information that he suddenly had supernatural strength and killed a lion in the vineyard at Timnah. Then he went down and he talked with the woman, and she was right in Samson's eyes. So they go down together and they go through the procedures. The vows are made, the betrothal dinner party takes place, money is exchanged between Samson's family and the family of the intended woman, and a generic date is set, some sort of time in the future where the wedding itself is going to take place. And then they head back up to Timnath. Now, verse 8 is where we're going to pick up next week. That happens at a later visit down that same road. Have a great weekend. I'll see you on the Monday, Lord willing.